This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs. And this is our brains. Boom! Explosion sound. I'll put that in later. Because it's time to kick off season 5. And we just watched Ozone on B-Movie Mania.
Welcome to the crossroads of camp, the bastion of the bizarre, the place where low budgets meet high praise. Yes, it's B-Movie Mania. And now, B-Movie Maniacs, here are your hosts, the cream of the crap, the connoisseurs of cult, your cinematic creepy uncles, Paul Brooks, Mike Hayes, Jason Hulls, and Crazy Chris Hudson.
Welcome to Season 5, everyone. I am your host tonight, Jason Hulls. And with me for another fix are the usual B-movie addicts, Paul Brooks.
All right, Season 5, here we go. What is the angle, you guys? What's the bit? Are we on a boat? Are we in a car driving across the country? Or on a plane or something? What's going on here? What are we doing?
Crazy Chris Hudson. And Mike Hayes.
B-Movie Maniacs. There was a time when we were lost, wandering like sheep and rooting through the gutters like dogs. But then came a light to show us the way. A pure celluloid light of illumination, that is B-Movie Mania.
Mm-hmm. Here we are.
That was a speech for you. I hope you liked it.
That's good. So are you guys ready to enter the Ozone?
Not like that. Ooh. No, that was a different movie.
Get your O faces on, everybody.
Oh.
Sounds like Paul's ready for the Ozone.
No, this is a Wait, did I not watch a porno? Was I supposed to watch a porno?
Well, there was a little bit in there.
100% uncut.
This movie was written and directed by J.R. Bookwalter. Anybody look up J.R. Bookwalter?
I did.
He's a Renaissance man.
He is. He really is. Yeah. He has worked with the likes of Sam Raimi, who financed his first movie. He worked with David Ducoutier, I think is how we agreed to pronounce that here.
Yeah.
John Russo, and of course, Charles Band.
Certainly.
Paul, how do you feel about that Charles Band connection?
Oh, well, you know, I feel pretty good about it because if I'm not mistaken, this is going to be a shock to our listeners, mm-hmm. but once upon a time, Jay and myself were in Little Rock, Arkansas for a film festival that was hosted by Charles Band, and we actually had an opportunity to meet the man himself, Charles Band, and we will post that photo down below on bmoviemania.com.
Amazing.
Jay, can you edit in like some celebration sounds like you like the 100th caller just won something? Because we made it 3 minutes into season 5 before our first Charles Band reference.
You know, Chris, normally I'd just cut that out, but that's a pretty good bit you got going there. So, yeah, I'm going to go ahead
nice.
And pick on
Thanks,
those,
Thank you.
Those sounds for you, which you've already heard by now.
Yes.
Those were wonderful.
Anybody look up the budget on this movie?
$3,500 USD.
Yep. $3,500.
Nice.
Shot on super VHSC.
Well, when the director also writes, produces, edits, does the music for just literally everything in the movie, it's gonna be cheaper.
I did watch an interview with him, and he seems like a pretty cool guy. He seems just like a real hard worker.
Yeah.
Is he like an effects guy? Because, you know, obviously special effects are a big part of this movie. Is that kind of his thing? And is that why he's worked with so many of these other people that you mentioned?
I believe he did post for Charles Band for about like 5 years. And he said in the interview I saw, he said he got into doing post because that's something people would actually pay you for.
Well, the other writer with the writing partner or the co-writer of this movie, David A. Wagner, did do visual effects on Craw, the sea monster.
Really? I didn't see that.
Very nice.
We don't get too many Craw references.
Not enough. We need more Craw our lives.
The movie stars James Black, who really has a long, is still working. He has a long career. A lot of TV. He was actually a running back for the Cleveland Browns for a couple of years.
And he also played the role of Riley in the movie Soldier and played the role of Soldier in the movie Godzilla.
That is true. Nice connection. Let's do some quick takes.
Quick takes!
You get to go first, Chris.
All I can really say is, let the games begin! I think that's how he said that. In the hallway gladiator scene.
We will definitely talk about that. Michael.
Asshole dog dick son of a bitch.
Paul? This is how bad I've gotten with my B movie fandom. When you announced this movie for our season 4 roundup and you said we're going to watch Ozone, I told you I'd never heard of it before. But it turns out not only had I heard of it before, I own it on DVD.
Look at that motherfucker.
Oh yeah, Street Zombies. Yeah.
And I've seen it multiple times. And yeah, the reason that I didn't realize that I had seen it before is because previously it was a movie called Street Zombies. So it seems like it's gone through a couple different... If you watch the credits at the end, I know this is a long quick take, but there's like a remastered version and then like a restored version. So they've kind of gone through a couple different versions of this thing.
Right. And, you know, the Blu-ray that just came out, I think it... I'm not exactly sure what year, but it's more recent. I think within a year. The Blu-ray has like 3 commentary tracks and I'm still tempted. Like, there's just a lot of questions I had about this movie. I'm so tempted to get the Blu-ray just to check out those.
That's fair.
And because I'll never be able to say this later in the thing, and Paul, you referenced the credits and stuff, I just noticed, wanted to say real quick, there's an assistant editor credit named Yolanda Squat Pump. And if I ever get to talk to JR, I want to ask him what is behind the name Yolanda Squat Pump.
Wow. Jay, what's your quick take?
I don't have a bit for this. I just think it's a really great example of not needing the best of everything to make a good story.
Yeah.
Does anybody have an IMDb synopsis on hand?
Yeah, I got it right here.
Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. While ambushing a drug dealer, Detective Eddie Boone is injected in a fight against the dealer with a new drug called Ozone, which transforms... I'm having a hard time reading this.
I think it's a Brazilian guy, right?
It's not written well. Which transforms the user in powerful zombies. His partner and friend, Mike Wetz, is kidnapped by a group of Ozone addicts. Eddie tries to find Mike in the streets, fighting against the zombies and having several hallucinations due to the effect drug in his blood.
That's where they get Street Zombies from.
Okay. And also it makes sense. The person who wrote the synopsis, English is not their first language. So that explains a couple missing words.
Jay, the what's on the back of the DVD here is a lot better if you want me to read that.
Oh, sure. Well, fuck you too, Paul.
Uh-huh. It says here, Hollywood hits, best way to own movies, from classics to new releases, full-length feature film, great value, great price, satisfaction guaranteed. It says it all right there.
Wow. That's pretty sweet.
Folks, that is all it says. Where did you get that, Paul?
Like in a bin at like a Dollar General or something like 10 years ago.
Like, it doesn't even come with a proper cover.
No, there's nothing.
Jeez.
Love
it. You can download some sweet Ozone cover art off the internet and print that out.
Hell yeah.
So, Chris, why don't you talk to us a little bit about the beginning here?
Well, you get a junkie because, you know, this is all about Ozone, some drugs. Mm-hmm. And This really had me wondering about the motives of the dealers behind Ozone, which they explain it later. They catch everything. They answer almost every question I had. But you get a junkie. He's got, I mean, some dealer says, hey, I got something new for you to try.
This is my brand new concoction. This stuff will blow your mind.
So it just gives him this hit of ozone. And he takes it into a laundry room where it sounds like a party is going on. He shoots up some ozone.
And does that go good? Like, is he really like high and happy and everything's great?
Oh, yeah, well, he gets... Well, I mean, first you get the veins popping and bubbling and bursting open, and then his head does Michael Ironsides from Scanners kind of thing, and
yeah,
explodes.
For a $3,500 budget, dude,
it's great.
Pretty good effects in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, all of the effects are fantastic. Not a single one looks bad.
So then we zip over to a couple cops, right, Mike?
Yeah, cop one and cop two. They're sitting in a car waiting for God knows what.
This is Eddie Boone. This is our main guy.
Mm-hmm.
And his partner, Mike Weitz. And they are there to meet a snitch named Squeaky.
Mm-hmm.
But things don't really go according to plan, do they, Paul?
I thought everything went fine. They're there to... There's sort of like the main drug lord that Eddie has been trying to bust for like years, right?
Yes. Thank you for mentioning that. His name is DeBartolo.
Yeah, DeBartolo, Sam DeBartolo. Yeah.
So they're trying to like connect this squeaky guy or whatever to DeBartolo, and the drug deal goes bad, and the 19-year-old drug lord gets shot, and then Squeaky runs away. But there's some really important stuff that happens right here because Eddie gets he's tussling here as the drug bust goes wrong here. He's tussling and he gets stuck with ozone in his arm. And and then Mike, his partner, takes off after Squeaky for some reason, and they go into this like drug flop house that is lit very nicely for whatever reason.
It's beautiful.
Would you call that a fatal mistake?
I would, because Mike gets attacked by a bunch of, to use the term from my DVD here, he gets attacked by a bunch of street zombies.
The titular street zombies?
He does indeed. And he gets attacked with a very girthy shard of glass.
Chops his hand right off. He tries to put a tourniquet on with his belt. This is where like the street zombies start punching through the door. It's pretty cool, really.
Yeah.
Really well done. And I, like you said, Paul, the colors are all like, it's lit like this weird, surreal, like deep red color. And it's pretty neat.
It's very much influenced by German expressionism.
I was going to say it looks a lot like where you and Chris used to live in the 90s.
I think both of those statements are true.
Yes.
It is. That whole scene is Dutch tilt out the ass. It is great.
So yeah. I can't, I'm trying to remember. We don't actually see what happens to partner Mike, right?
Well, we assume he's dead because the street urchins or street rats or the children that break through the door that are zombies, they come after him and it zooms in on his face and he screams and it cuts away. So he must be dead.
Right. And then Eddie ends up back at the police station, which again, for no money, they pulled off a pretty good police station.
It's like a YMCA or something.
And I had to laugh. I mean, this is just one of those dumb things that you notice. But like, Eddie is at his desk before the chief calls him in to yell at him. And Eddie's desk is up against a door. And like, his back is right up against a door.
Yeah, they really crammed him in there. But you know, they got some donuts on his desk to make it look very cop-like.
I would bet dollars to donuts.
Oh.
That the, like, rec center that they filmed this in, or whatever, I bet you all the interiors are in the same building. I bet, because there's some other stuff in the other, maybe not the bar scene. The bar scene's probably somewhere else.
That's
but
a real bar.
Yeah, but there's a lot of other stuff that that weirdly kind of stays in the same room that I was a little confused by. But thinking about it now, I bet they're like, all right, let's film it here. So this is going to be this location, and here's this. Like, they probably pieced it out and did a really good job at, you know, making it all seem different.
That is true.
That's could be wrong. Possible. I could be full. It could be completely wrong. But
yeah, you know, that's one thing I wanted to say. That's one thing I wanted to say about this movie. I love that they use the locations they could get and did their best to make it look like something else. And they weren't always successful at it, but it still worked. It still really worked.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It really did. Like in the flop house, I mean, there's just boxes and papers everywhere. I mean, they just did a nice job of making it look run down, I thought.
Yeah.
I mean, especially everything looks really good, especially for 1993 when this was made.
Yeah. Absolutely, very much so.
We have a scene with the chief.
Listen, Eddie, I know we don't get along. I'm not particularly crazy about your style, but that doesn't change my opinion of you. You're a good cop. You get the job done.
Is there a point to this?
Just shut up. You're on the ragged edge and you're making mistakes.
I don't know. The chief is all over the place with Eddie.
Yeah, he's abusive. He's abusive, I mean, towards Eddie. He's negging him out all over the place.
It's very similar to Dead Heat in that the chief claims to like him, but still yells at him and has to suspend him.
Yeah, has to.
But I don't think he actually turns in his badge and gun.
Well, after that, well, before he does that, he's like, take a vacation. I don't like you. You're a good cop. I don't like your methods. You get the job done. You're suspended. It's just all over.
Very confusing leadership.
The film really is a testament and maybe a commentary on how mental health and therapy would be good within the police enforcement of America. Boy.
My favorite line of the movie is actually right here when Eddie keeps kind of like pushing the chief's buttons here, and finally the chief goes, that's it, you're suspended as of right now. And Eddie just goes,
you suck.
You suck.
Yeah, he does. It's so good.
Put that in, Jay. Put that in.
You suck.
Oh, it's in there because I had that in my notes too. And that's what I said. Like, I don't think he actually turns in his badge and gun there. I think he keeps it. Right?
No, he doesn't.
No, he keeps it.
Which is a funny thing I noticed about the movie. There's not a lot of swearing in this or like yelling at other people. But when there is, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Eddie hits the bathroom because I think the ozone is starting to kick in here.
Well, here's the thing. He melts into like a skeleton. But
all the way down.
But I mean, it looks great. Like,
it fucking looks amazing.
It
looks good.
It does. And it's awesome. But yeah. Then, like, you know, after this happens, he wakes up in his apartment completely fine. So they're kind of playing with this thing of like, was that a dream? Did that really happen? Or is it just the ozone? Is it the drug, you know, messing with his system?
Well, Paul, I hardly think he wakes up fine, because when he does get up, the first thing he does he open a beer or something? No, he opens a wine cooler. It's hardly fine.
The real Eddie would never do that.
Eddie zooms off in his, what is that, a Datsun? Like a silver?
Yes, it's awesome.
Oh, guess who has a Carfax?
Oh, God.
Carfax.
Oh, probably boy. You.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it is me that has this Carfax. So I did a lot of searching because this car, Paul, you might remember this. Maybe not, though. This is almost the first car I ever owned. I owned a car that was almost identical to this, and I thought it was it, because all the cars in the early 80s looked the same. I owned a 1983 Nissan Stanza.
Uh-huh.
But this, I believe, is a 1981 VW Scirocco.
What?
Yeah, Scirocco. It's a hatchback. People, it's a beautiful classic 80s car. It looks like shit, but the kind of way you want it to. Like, personally, I don't know. I have an affinity for this kind of car.
I don't think I ever saw you in that car, Mike, but I know that afterwards you took the hatchback off and turned it into a table.
Yes, that, okay, there you go. So the hatchback, my dad, because we did destroy the car. It did stop working, so then in the parking lot of my high school, we did destroy it with sledgehammers. It was very good. So that's
you taped that?
Wait, who did this?
No, I was before, my, literally, the car stopped dying. Oh my God, this is more of a car fact than I thought it would be.
Keep it going, Mike.
That car stopped working, and then one day, middle of school, I get called to the principal's office, and it's just because my dad had brought it in, asked the principal if we could smash it the shit out of it in the parking lot. Me, my best friend Jake, and my brother all get out of class to go in the parking lot where there's kids in class looking out the windows, watching us standing on top of this fucking car, smashing the shit out of it.
Why did your dad ask the principal if you guys could smash the car in the middle of the day at the school?
Well, I know that sounds like a reasonable question or an appropriate question to ask, but I think as Paul has met my father, I think Paul just gets it. That's just what my dad does.
Yeah, I mean, just imagine Mike like 20 years from now and there you go.
But like, so your dad was at home and he's like, I know what Mike needs today at sixth hour. He gets a bunch of sledgehammers, drives to the school, and asks the principal, can my son, my two sons and their friend get out of class to smash his dead car in the parking lot?
And how many sledgehammers does your dad own?
He's a handy man. Listen, I know we're getting off track here. Let's just save this for the bonus episode where we ask my dad about this, okay?
Okay, yes. Because nice. I'm into this. And right. If there's any photos of your car, Mike, we'd love to post one.
I mean, this is way pre-digital, but I'll figure it out. I'll find all right, something.
Maybe not. We'll see. Anyway, then we're introduced to a naked fat thing sitting on a throne, right?
That's one way to put it.
Okay. It's just a quick shot of this thing as he turns around and I think he laughs. I don't know. I feel like he laughs, but
yeah,
just a quick shot of him. Eddie's checking the area, sees Richter's chalk outline from when he got stuck with the needle, and he's just investigating the whole area and ends up inside the flop house, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's in the flop house. He gets attacked by some zombies again. And then he's like, I'm just passing through or whatever. Don't mind me. And then he falls through the floor, because it's a flop house.
Right.
Wait, is that after the zombie asks him if he's one of them already?
It's before. Right. So before he falls through the floor, the zombies are talking to him.
They can tell. They can smell that he is one of them.
Yeah, which he doesn't think he is, but he has been, stabbed with the thing.
Right.
So he falls through the floor, and he gets away?
Yeah, he just gets away. There is epic music as he's running through the parking lot to his car.
Yeah, he goes out to his cool car and then goes to his old partner, Mike's apartments.
Yes.
Because after everything went bad with the drug bust, nobody has been able to find Mike since then.
Yeah,
right.
He's probably dead.
And now we're forced to talk about the maid outside of Mike's apartment.
Oh, this is my favorite part.
Oh, Chris, well, then you should absolutely talk about this then.
Oh, no, it's just some crazy maid. So Mike Eddie goes to Mike's apartment. Thinking he's going to bust in or something, but there's a maid cleaning the apartment across the hall. She's got the keys to Mike's apartment. Sure, I'll let him on in. But she does ask for ID before.
And she doesn't believe it.
But she does have a very creative, name for him after she lets him in.
Asshole. Dog dick.
Yeah. Yes.
Eddie looks around Mike's apartment, doesn't really find him. One of Mike's messages is for Eddie.
Yeah, what the fuck is this?
The message is, Mike's one of us, and soon you will be too. So we know Mike is not dead. He's one of these things, supposedly.
We need to talk about how Eddie gets arrested, first of all. That's very important. Cop-on-cop action is going on.
Oh, yeah.
It's happening right here.
This is a great scene, too.
Oh, this is my favorite scene.
Oh, well, Paul, if this is your favorite scene, you should talk about it.
This is... So Eddie is going back out to his, what was it, Mike?
Oh, his 1981 VW Scirocco.
Yeah. And this other cop shows up and tries to arrest him. And Eddie's like, what the hell? And like, it's clear that something is really wrong here, right? Like, he's one of the ozone mutants, right?
I mean, what the fuck is this?
And so this is amazing right here. They are in a virtually empty parking lot somewhere. You can see the yellow lines painted on the asphalt. But for whatever reason, cars are whipping past them at 45 miles an hour.
That parking lot has a kick-ass speed limit.
And so Eddie pushes this guy, and he basically like gets clipped by one of this car, like you hear the sound effects and everything. He's like, oh, and then you're like, okay, well, that was just a weird anomaly. Somebody was going too fast in a parking lot. No. Another car, maybe even the same car, I'm not sure, somehow comes back around after this guy has gotten clipped and falls down. And again, going 45 to 50 miles per hour, runs over his head in the parking lot. And then hits his brakes, and, you know, like, all these people rush to the scene like, oh my God, how did this happen? Well, you were going 45 miles an hour in a parking lot. What did you expect?
There's a lot of cautionary tales in
amazing,
this movie.
Amazing.
So Eddie flees the scene and ends up in the saddest bar ever. they are playing on the jukebox. I'm sure you guys caught this because you couldn't miss it.
Oh,
they
yeah.
are playing a parody song, an original parody song, not Weird Al's.
No. Nope.
A parody song of Achy Breaky Heart.
Let me shout at you.
But it's the same thing as Weird Al's version.
Nope. It's different words.
Slightly different.
It's this different one is, words.
Can I say that this one also features the artist Snow?
And yeah, the star of our goddamn movie. James yeah. Black is featured in it. And there's cusses. Somehow. It says ass and fuck in it. So it's not yeah. Weird Al.
But, okay, well, how is it different from Weird Al's version, other
they
than a couple words?
They changed the words.
What words?
The lyrics are a little different.
The lyrics are different.
But, they're not that much different.
But Weird Al had a famous parody come out of Achy Breaky Heart.
That same right? year, even. 93.
Right, yeah. I mean, he's on his shit.
But I'm confused about what you're confused about. They did their own parody. There's 800 million parodies of that song. I'll tell you why I know this, because I hunted down to try to find out what version it was once I realized it wasn't Weird Al. This is where my notes stop, because I got too invested in trying to figure this shit out. I don't have really any more notes for the fucking movie.
Okay.
Well, Mike, I really want to hear about this, because I mean, I'm not a big fan. I think Snow was just like a one-hit wonder, right? I mean, he did
Informer?
That song, Informer.
It
yeah.
can't be that Snow.
It's I can't. Not that that's Snow. The thing. I can't imagine it would be. But on IMDb for the songs, it's a link to Snow's page.
Like, why would what? Snow? Why would,
what's the connection?
Why would Snow be in Akron, Ohio?
I have no idea. That's all what right. I'm wondering.
Here's what I'm gonna do. I'm going to tweet JR. And I'm going to try to find out what the connection to Snow is. Hey there, B-Movie Maniacs. It's Jay from the future. I'm using some 95ers type time travel technology. Turns out I actually did tweet to J.R. Bookwalter, and it is not the Informer Snow that did the song. Turns out there's another musical artist in Ohio that goes by Snow. That's who did the Achy Breaky song. So Eddie is in this sad bar, and everyone is quiet and just, they look upset and they're drinking and no one's talking. He even makes a comment about it. Eddie finds somebody shooting up ozone in the bathroom, and as he backs out, they're all there and they attack him.
Well, they're probably angry he ordered gin.
Yeah, it could be. This is where he gets the gin.
Yeah.
Chris, we are here.
Yes. And they carry him to the most amazing gladiatorial arena I have ever seen in my life.
So, I love this.
So let's just picture. It's a very dimly lit hallway with, you know, it's just blank white walls on one end. It looks like there are hallways on either end that kind of cut off, but I couldn't quite tell. On the other side is like just like a mesh screen, like the people are like watching through. But you never really get a sense of like, is the hallway right next to the mesh screen? Because they never show them together. I don't think it was. But I think they just wanted to make it seem like this fight scene was not shot in a hallway.
Yeah, but right. Because you never see the crowd that is there behind the chicken wire. You never see them at the same time as the gladiators.
Yeah. But this is another example of, it's a fucking hallway.
Yeah. Sort of,
you'd think they could find a better gladiatorial arena than a hallway. But nope. You know what? Whatever. I'm rolling with it.
Yeah. I say it looks legit. And I understand it looks low budget. But within this world, it was believable to me that there would be this weird fighting cage
like
in
Fight
the bottom
Club.
Of this crappy bar. Exactly. It's like Fight Club. So I totally bought this.
Yeah, no real Fight Club has some fancy like octagon shit. It's a fucking hall. It's the storage area at the bottom of an apartment complex. Yeah.
Right. The S&M champ walks in.
Oh, yes.
He's looking good. He's got like his, what, like a little leather diaper and some like bandolier type of things.
And the most awesome gladiatorial weapon of all time.
Oh, yes. They give him, what, a baseball bat with a buzzsaw
blade. I don't even think it's a baseball bat. It's like wooden stick.
Axe handle. It's an axe
something.
Handle.
Isn't that what it is? Yeah. With a saw blade nailed to the end of it.
And to be fair, they give Eddie one.
They do.
Yeah, and they have a pretty good fight. Something we haven't really touched on yet, I don't think, in this review yet, is that I think the cinematography and directing is very well done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
JR definitely has some chops, and he knows how to stretch a dollar, clearly.
Well, a lot of times you get, you know, these really low-budget movies. There's stuff that you can tell they don't really know how to frame a shot. They don't know how to properly edit a scene together. You don't get that feeling at all in this movie. It really feels, you know, like a normal movie just shot on a video camera.
Mm-hmm. So at the end of this pulse pounding fight, Eddie actually kills the champ. Eddie becomes the champ and you just veins start popping. Like, all the people watching, they're just going nuts. Their veins are popping out, exploding. Their veins are exploding. There's, like, people morphing in front of him, freaking out. And then when he escapes through this little hole in the wall.
He escapes through a hole in the wall. Yeah. But he grabs his shirt first. He's got to grab his outfit.
Eddie seems like a very, you know, Eddie's a cop, and he seems like a very street smart kind of guy. So it makes sense that he's, you know, for the most part, handling all of this fairly well until we get to the next scene.
Oh, God.
This was probably one, I don't know if I'd call it my favorite scene, but it's a standout for sure.
Oh, interesting.
He finds this woman named Justine just chilling in this strange underground little passage that he finds from crawling through the hole in the wall.
So he's still down there, like in the general vicinity of where he nearly got killed 30 seconds ago.
You have a very nice face.
So she's very nice to him and says something about nice. That she wanted a quiet place for when the change happens. And he's like, what are you talking about? And this whole scene, this is just pure fever dream stuff here. This is where things are just getting nuts. So, again, these people are looking for him. They're changing. Their veins are popping. He finds this woman and has a conversation. And she grabs his wrist and starts licking these boils that are from where he was injected with the stuff.
Mm-hmm. Are they erogenous zones now? Mike, do you have a kink tank for this?
I wish
No, he doesn't.
So she's licking these boils and they're both super into it. Yeah. I mean, they're like orgasmic and
they finish.
Oh, God. Well, I think, isn't that what covers them up before to like their cocoon? Just like your sexual fluids.
Hudson, it's pronounced cum-coon.
Oh, cum-coon. All right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Just this goo covers both of their bodies. They transform into monsters and then they have sex together.
Cum-coon.
You're watching this, just like, what is happening here?
Let's just pause for how good cum-coon was.
Oh,
God damn it.
Mike, sorry.
It's but I think this is important to point out that it's not the same type of makeup that like the street zombies are. They're like fully formed, like alien, almost like bad taste looking things.
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say Peter Jackson masks.
They look like jism monsters. Like this thin layer of creamy white stuff covers both their bodies into the cocoon. And then they like morph into these like weird, like God toxic Avenger, but like kind of a creamy white pink kind of look. And then sexy saxophone music, you know, and then.
But I mean, that's all, you know, that's all well and good. But like.
Yeah, it was.
I'm so disappointed in Eddie. Like he gets down there. He starts to escape from this near death situation. And. What's her name? Jessica or whatever?
Justine.
She comes up. She's just like, hey, what's going on? Get out of there, dude. Well, what are you doing?
Paul, come on. To be fair, I mean, I've heard there are lots of stories and history books and things throughout all that are passed down from soldier to soldier that after you've killed a man, the first thing you need is a good woman.
Oh.
So after you climb through that hole in the wall. He took advantage of the first chick
and
he
then
saw.
And then the second thing you need is a good cum-coon.
Yes.
When he wakes up from the post-coital woof, he's human again, and Justine is gone, and he's still there. The people are gone, and he's just laying in this weird little hole place, but he's human. Yeah. And then he exits and into like an alleyway where are these, there are these Hellraiser looking psychotic philosophers because they all have buzz saws in their heads. Yeah. And they're just like
I thought
nails
that was a mohawk at first.
You thought they were what?
I thought it was a mohawk at first. I think you get a closer look at it. It's a fucking buzz saw.
It's
it's a mohawk, but it's a saw blade.
It's a buzz hawk.
You think, okay, Eddie's going to fight, and they surround him. But no, they don't. They just start talking about him. He's like, what do you want from me? That classic thing. And they're like, well, you know, what do you want? What does anybody want? Like, they're just getting philosophical in the middle of this alley, and Eddie's losing his mind.
What do you want?
An intriguing question. What does any of us want?
One of them even stabs himself through the hand. Just to be like, no pain here. Mm-hmm. You can join us. And then Eddie's screaming, and then they're just gone.
Does Eddie meet any actual real people in this movie?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's so hard to tell what is actually happening and what, I mean, is it in Eddie's head? Is it all real? Like, does he transform back into a human from an alien, you know?
I love that about this movie.
I think this whole thing is just a dream from when he got stabbed with ozone in the first scene. Mm-hmm. And the rest of it is just like he OD'd. He's dead.
He's dead.
But
yeah.
That's the thing. Like the movie sets up those questions and allows for that kind of speculation. And that's why I love it. And because of what they do with the ozone, you can do absolutely anything in this movie, which I think is so cool and like very freeing from a writing perspective.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a bathtub full of body sludge in a few minutes.
Oh, yes. That was gross. Eddie calls Donna, who is a cop in the office, and she says that, you know, Mike is still not back. Eddie's accused of killing the guy who got his head run, the policeman who got his head run over. We'll breeze through a little bit of this. In the morgue, we have Richter come back again and kill the mortician. So he's back in action.
Oh, but you got a really sweet lingering shot of his ass.
Oh,
yeah. You can't pass that up.
Oh, yeah. The mortician sinks down right in front of him. And so it's just foreground butt shot and the mortician's face. Lingering, I think, Chris, is the correct word.
Yeah.
But so Richter ends up going to his boss, right?
Yes.
Who we learn is the big fat mutant guy that was sitting on the throne.
We can't undersell this. It is like a classic top level bad guy who just like very, very original Battlestar Galactica, where it's just a guy on a throne in a room with nothing else, but he is like this big fat, he has a huge belly, and he's like just this mutant alien looking creature. He talks exactly like Mushu Fasa from Kung Pao, and it is amazing. Mike, you know he does.
I know he does. I didn't make that connection, but that's very good.
I am Mushu Fasa. I'm speaking in riddles. That's kind of the point, like a clue that will later make you go, oh, that's what he meant. Stars above. When I was in human form, you knew me as Sam DiBartolo.
DiBartolo.
Because it's like, I think it's a guy in a suit.
Yeah.
Because like his arms
move. It looks
move,
like it, yeah.
His arms move pretty good, but no other part of him can move. He just sits in that chair. And there's a big reveal that happens with him, but I don't think we're there yet.
Not quite. And so, yeah, Eddie's sleeping in the car. He's still tripping hard, evidently, because he sees Justine around a fire, and she kisses him, and she like turns into a skeleton, and then there's nobody around, and Eddie's by himself. This is where he crawls through a window, I believe back at the flop house, and sees the body parts floating in a tub, just a stew of guts, which I think was probably one of the more gross effects.
Whoa. It looked like a big old vat of body sludge.
It did. Eddie ends up finding Squeaky, the informant from the beginning, with a needle in his arm of ozone, and then these demons who've been driving around town.
Demon joyride!
Yeah, they roll in and capture Eddie, and they shoot Squeaky to death.
I couldn't tell if that was supposed to be a Wayne's World parody or not.
I know, right? It looked just like it.
It feels like it.
Pretty good.
So this is, I believe, the reveal. So they take Eddie in to see the big fat blob, and it is revealed, Paul.
He stumbled upon this like formula for this drug, and it started turning people into this other thing. And he has this plan for like using it for world domination. And it turns out that it's, what's his name, DiBartolo or whatever.
When I was in human form, you knew me as Sam DiBartolo.
It's the it is the main bad guy that Eddie has been trying to bust for years. So he has turned into this weird ozone mutant freak and has been peddling all these drugs in order to take over the population, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know about he says something about this, this is the next step of, like, humanity, or this is, like...
You are the beginning of the new order. Through you, I will change the face of the world.
What are you talking about?
This transformation is... how?
How is this
a good thing? You're a big, fat mutant in a fucking throne. You can't move.
You can't move at all.
I guess they have sex organs on their blisters, so that's one thing.
I believe I'm back in the movie again. The Goblin King, I believe, does say that ozone lets you live again, as he says.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
which I don't know what that means or why that's good, because it seems like a shitty life, but it's what he said.
That's true. I don't know if we really pointed out that, like, at various points in the movie, they get shot. Like, he gets shot at some point. Richter gets shot several times. And then, you know, like Jay said, he comes back to life in the morgue. So, like, I guess the advantage of being on ozone is that you are possibly immortal, but you look like absolute dog shit.
It's like a wish gone wrong. I want to be immortal. Okay, but you look like ass.
Yeah, right. Real monkey's paw shit.
Yeah.
They take Eddie. They want to keep him in a holding cell until he, you know,
what
hits
kind
the
of
next
holding
level.
Cell is this?
Chris, can you talk about this holding cell?
Oh my god, it's just like a bunch of like the junk closet. Like all kinds of crap just thrown in there. And he finds a hammer.
It takes him 10 seconds to find a hammer in the holding cell.
Is this also, if I'm remembering right, much like other parts of the movie, is this just a chicken wire room that they've thrown someone in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, just checking.
Hey, tough guy.
Who's the tough guy now, huh? Who's the tough guy now?
Yeah. Hey, tough guy.
Huh?
He's a tough guy now.
Tough
hey, tough guy.
Now, huh?
He's a tough guy now. Like, literally. Over.
Yeah. So all Eddie does is hide with the hammer, and the guy's like, hey, wait, where'd you go? And he walks in and just gets cracked.
No, it's worse than that. He says, hey, tough guy. You in here, tough guy?
I got a gun, tough guy. Tough guy. You in there, tough guy?
Well, yeah, you put him in there. What it is essentially a cop walking into a jail cell and asking if a prisoner is inside the jail cell and then getting killed with a hammer.
Right. So in less than 30 seconds after he was put in there.
You in there, tough guy.
You in there, tough guy?
You in there, tough guy.
Eddie escapes. He quickly finds Mike. And this I find hilarious because Mike just looks like garbage. He's transforming, just puke and milk everywhere.
<It's great.
laughs> He's talking. That must have been so fun to shoot, because every time he's like, Mike, or he's like, Eddie, kill me, Eddie.
Kill me, man. Kill me.
And he's just, milk's running down his face.
It's probably left over from the cum-coon.
Oh.
Hey!
Okay. So, yeah, Eddie does not kill him, and Mike is pretty pissed about it.
Understandably.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Leaves him there. Because, you know, he's hoping to save him, I'm sure. Okay, who wants to talk about
God.
The next holding cell with
oh
Justine?
God.
Chris, come on now. All right. We find Justine again in real life this time.
Oh my God. And she's like, I don't know. Is she in another room or behind in another cell or something?
It's just the cell next
another
to Mike.
Cell, yeah.
But her back is to Eddie. She's kind of turning around, just turned her head back to talk to him. And she squats down and gives birth to a fucking demon baby.
Eddie, you came for the birth.
That's how it usually works, as far as I understand. I don't have kids, but
you just and then the stand there and shit it out.
And then the demon baby says something to Eddie. I didn't write it down,
yeah,
but it's
Eddie,
like
talking Daddy,
to
Daddy.
Oh my God!
Immediately,
it's crazy.
And even for whatever reason, even though Eddie is a black man and Justine is a white woman, it doesn't look mixed.
No, it's very creamy.
It's very creamy.
And it has horns. It has actual demon.
Oh, yeah.
Little demon raisin. Little pale demon raisin.
Eddie is obviously horrified.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah, so
and this
so
is the thing
real.
I like about Eddie, too. Eddie, it just takes the fight right back to DeBartolo, storms right into the room. He is not taking any shit. And DeBartolo is still wanting Eddie to join the team. And they shoot at each other, and we, you know, DeBartolo can just heal it, but Eddie has to run off again. And we get this whole fight with the Wayne's World demon guys and Richter, and they fight into an ammo room. And Eddie ends up slumping down into a wheelchair that I swear they probably used as a dolly at some point in this
sure.
movie.
100%.
Yeah, and he finds dynamite. Something that I just appreciate so much is that Eddie is not giving up at all. He still tries to go back and fight DeBartolo.
Yep.
And, all right, so who wants to talk about this fight?
Oh, boy.
This is sort of the home stretch here.
I will do it.
Please.
He goes back, and the thing about DeBartolo is he's not worried one bit, because
he
thinks he's immortal. I mean, Eddie shoots him. It heals immediately.
He's fine.
He's like, Eddie, you got no choice here. Like, you can't kill me. And
Eddie's fucked, man.
And he comes up to DeBartolo and just like, does he have a knife or something? He just like gets into his stomach.
DeBartolo cuts himself.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
He wants to show how immortal he is. And he takes a knife and cuts his belly open.
The hubris. So the idea, DeBartolo.
The idea is that Bartleby cuts his stomach open, and he's like, "Look at me, ha 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 ha! I can't die." And it starts healing back up, but then Eddie runs up there before it's healed, and that's what he's doing. Is that what he's supposed to be doing?
Okay. Yeah, yes. And he sticks a bunch of dynamite in there, and DeBartolo realizes for the first time that he's in some trouble here.
Well, I think because he realized the one unfortunate side effect of ozone is it makes you explosive.
Right.
So when Eddie used the dynamite to bust open the door in the animal room, he just blew open the door. Not a big deal. But when Eddie blows up DeBartolo in his ozone form, everything explodes.
Well, Eddie also had the bright idea to, as he was running out of this building, toss sticks of dynamite in every other room.
Oh, did he? I thought it was just DeBartolo exploding.
Yeah, this is like a chain reaction.
Please don't overlook the fact that after he shoved the explosives into the monster's stomach, he did do some sort of a jump roll into the camera that was very enjoyable.
Yes.
As he then runs out and throws dynamite sticks everywhere.
So
and then
the building explodes, and you would think, oh, well, maybe we'll just overlay some CG over this. No. I believe, unless my eyes were deceiving me, that there's some miniature work in here.
Possible.
It looked pretty convincing.
Well, so Eddie is captured by the police because we just cut to him being interrogated. They think Eddie killed 35 people, and he's not really denying it.
Yeah, he's kind of like, he seems like there's no way for him to get out of this. And he says, like, just save the taxpayers some money, basically saying, like, don't even give me a trial. Just lock me up.
The ending, though. Oh,
this ending is so bad. I mean, like, I like it, but it's bad.
Yeah. Okay. Chris, would you like to discuss the ending shots here?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, like we said, Eddie's kind of confessing and just lock me away, whatever. And you get the interrogator. It's so clearly just a voiceover. It's not the guy talking in the room, but the guy is standing up in the shadows and they're talking for like 3 minutes. So, you know, it's like, okay, it's going to be one of the fucking mutant guys, isn't it? And it turns around and, oh, my God, it's one of the fucking mutant guys.
I was a little confused. It is Richter again, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought so.
But it's not his voice at all.
So yeah, it's a reveal, and then you see Eddie's reaction, and he's like, "What?" And then it's like close up, and then credits.
Yeah.
Yolanda Squad Pump.
Rating time.
I want to rate this 1 to 100 achy breaky exploding veins. All right, Chris, would you like to go first?
I'll go first. Sure. The whole thing seems like a dream. Things go from one thing to another, and they don't feel connected necessarily. And there's all kinds of weird exploding and melting and weird sex and demon babies and exploding drug lords. And it's just weird. But, I mean, it's done well. I mean, it looks cheap, but it's done really well. I mean, I mentioned the locations look weird for what they're supposed to be, but you just kind of go with it. It's like I don't know. It's very dreamy to me. And I think I kind of liked it, but not a lot. So I think I need to see this again. I only had a chance to watch this once. I think a second viewing, I'd probably raise my score a bit. But as of right now, I'm going to go with 72 achy, breaky, exploding veins.
Okay, that's good. Mm-hmm. Nice, nice. Mm-hmm. Mike?
Dude, I can't recommend watching this movie more than I mean, do it. Take eat a dried mango dipped in some fucking weed chocolate, dude, because that shit, it is a perfect pairing for this fucking fever dream of a drug trip movie about a drug trip. It's a intensely competently made, super low budget movie that just, it is so well done. All the practical effects are done by people who know what the fuck they're doing. The beginning's a little slow, and I only say that in the sense of, like, if you want to get someone to watch it, you just need to get to a point. Once the first wild shit happens, it's fucking 55. Who's the guy?
Sammy Hagar?
Sammy Hagar. God damn it. Anyway, it's fucking great. Jay, you're going to hate me, but I give it a reverse 69 cumcoons.
Oh, I don't want to do that graphic.
Well, it's 96, by the way. It's a 96.
96?
Reverse 69 cumcoons.
Wow.
It's 96 with a slight white film over the score.
No, don't. He doesn't have to do something gross with it.
We'll see what
he does have to type out cumcoon.
Paul.
He's so mad about it.
It's great. Jay, you predicted that I was really going to like this one. You were correct. And it turns out that I had seen it before, but that just makes it all the more endearing to me because, like, this is how I love to discover movies, is by finding something in, you know, randomly in a bin somewhere for a dollar. I don't even remember where I got this, but there's no cover for it. I'm just like, what is this? So I've actually loved it for a long time, it turns out. So like I said, I'm going to deviate just slightly, and I'm going to, since it came out, or since it was made in 1993, I'm going to go 93, and I'm going to give it 93 Yolanda squat pumps.
What about you, Jay?
Wow. Fair. Okay. Yeah, man, I discovered this just, it sounded interesting and I just gave it a shot. And I think, like we said, it's so well directed. It's so trippy. You never know where you are. It's this just labyrinth of weird places. And one thing I like that we haven't touched on yet is that the whole thing, it kind of reminds me in a little bit of, like, the ending of Demons, where Demons is all about these people in this, you know, theater, but in the end, when they get out, you realize how much bigger the plot and the danger and the situation is. I feel like the same thing is here. You see this whole trip, this whole journey through Eddie Boone, but in the end, you start to realize how much bigger and more pervasive the craziness really is. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really cool. It's just a hint at the sort of epic nature of what could happen.
I got some demon vibes too, actually. I concur with that.
Yeah. And I like that movie. I love this movie. This is another one where I feel like we are here to talk about movies like this so people will find it and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, thoroughly enjoy. I'm going to go pretty high also. I'm going to say 95 achy breaky exploding veins.
Very nice.
Very highly recommend. So I'm glad you guys all enjoyed it. You know, I mean, you want to have, you know, a variety. We want different opinions. But, you know, to kick this first one off, I think it's nice that we all had a good time with it.
Yeah.
Tubi.
Mm-hmm. Yes, please watch it on Tubi, man. It's so good. I'm still thinking about that Blu-ray. I may just get it because I'm so
into this movie.
It's such a good watch. And I have so many questions about how they did things. Like, I may just have to do it. Yes, keep doing that music, because with that music, I'm going to pass this whole thing over to who comes next, and I believe it's Mike?
Okay, shut the fuck up. Jesus Christ.
Mike, what do we got next?
On the next episode of B-Movie Mania.
Oh, boys. call me Mr. Williams, because this season I'm only delivering treats.
What does that mean?
That means the first movie that I'm picking this season is called The Exigency.
What?
Ooh. The Exigency follows a retired war hero named Kyle, who is forced to return to his home planet, Galatia, in order to help end a seemingly impossible war with the neighboring planet of Anubis. Kyle is faced with consequences as his from his past while his family is caught in the middle. Also, this is a completely 3D animated film made by one man that took him 13 years to do it.
Whoa!
Are you making this up?
No.
I'm looking at the IMDb right now.
The Exigency is this wild feature-length 3D animated movie that a man, one person did. It took him 13 years to do it. He started in 1996. And it took him 13 years to make this movie. And I promise you, you will enjoy it.
Wow.
You can watch it on Amazon. It is on there. And I think exclusively there, because that's where this guy released it. It's just literally, he put his movie he made up on it.
That sounds awesome.
Well, there goes my later season low-budget animation pick.
All right, bye.
Jay, cut that out.
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydie? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out. Touch them. They're touching themselves. And they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!
We're still asking for ratings and reviews, if you're kind enough to leave them on any of your favorite podcasting services that you're probably listening to this on. And I think we still have clothes.
Oh, we have such cool clothes. Store.bmoviemania.com will bring us to our Tee Public store, which we have a variety of different clothing and other shit. And follow us on social media, right?
Yeah, we have them all. We have all of the social medias that you could ever want.
Hey, Jay.
Yeah.
We've been playing that Into the Black song underneath all of this, right?
Yes.
Okay, just making sure. Turn that shit up.
Okay, here we go. We're going to just rock out here. Bye.
Bye, guys. Bye.
Who's the tough guy now, huh? Who's the tough guy now? Huh? Who's the tough guy now, huh?